T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, the whole ball of wax for the Warriors comes down to Sunday against the Grizzlies. We know tonight the Warriors have the Pelicans and they're missing a few players. So how many players are the Grizzlies missing tonight? A meaningless game for them against Sacramento. They, too, getting ready for Sunday. Let's find out. Nice enough to join us, 13-year NBA vet, a guard out of Stanford, currently the Grizzlies TV analyst, Brevin Knight with us. Brevin, thanks so much for your time. Are the Grizzlies, as the Warriors are tonight, are they shorthanded, Brevin?
I believe the Grizzlies will be shorthanded also.
Yeah.
Both teams understanding how big the game Sunday afternoon is, and both teams want to be as ready as possible.
As regular season games go, where would this game rank in Grizzlies history? Because I know that a lot of times they've made their bones in the postseason. But I'm just trying to think of the last time there was a regular season game that popped like this one does.
That's a good question in terms of regular season. That would be this would probably at this point be the biggest, just because this is also year two of the rebuild of this Grizzlies team. And so to, again, for a second year, be knocking on the door of the playoffs and then with an opportunity to put yourself in a good position. Everybody covets 7-8 over 9-10 with the abilities to win one game and you're in, or having to win two games to get yourself in. And so I think it's big in the seeding, but I think it's also very big for this young, new Grizzlies basketball team and the style of play that they like to do. And so I would say of recent memory, this would be the biggest regular season game in a long time.
Brevin, Sunday's game now is so intriguing on so many different levels, but especially because Steph Curry hasn't seen the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies haven't seen Steph. You've watched this team closely all year. How do you expect this Grizzlies team to try and defend Steph coming into Sunday?
I would expect for Steph Curry to see a lot of Dylan Brooks, who has been a fantastic individual defender. He defends 1-4, and more times than not, he is on the opposing team's best wing player. And so I think first and foremost, they'll use his size and his physicality. He loves to pick up 94 feet. So it will be in a position where they're trying to force Steph to have to play against a physical guy away from the ball, not on the ball as much. And then from there, of course, it's going to require a lot of team help. But I think the one thing that has made the Warriors be as good as they are this year is how well they move the basketball, how well they do share the ball, the spacing on the floor, how quickly the ball moves from side to side. So, yes, Steph will be first and foremost, but the rest of your wings have played so much better this year, and I think a lot of that is just due to the movement on the offensive end.
Brevin Knight, nice enough to join us, Grizzlies TV analyst with the Warriors and the Grizzlies playing Sunday to determine who will be the eighth seed heading into the play-in thing. Wanted to ask you, Brevin, about, you know, I know Ja is amazing. That basket he had off an inbounds play last night, the jam was incredible. But as great as Ja is Valanciunas the real matchup, potentially real matchup problem for the Warriors?
I think he's pretty much almost a matchup nightmare every night for opposing teams until you play against Steven Adams or Jokic or Embiid, some size on the other end. And so he's going to be a handful. And because he's an efficient big at the center position, he still has the ability to knock down perimeter shots, even though that's not where he does the majority of his work. But he creates second chance opportunities. He was leading the league in second chance points. And so it gives this Grizzlies team more opportunities and something that they would like to have the advantage of because of how many threes the Warriors shoot and make. You would like to be able to say that you were able to get up more shots. And that's a area that he does a good job in. And then on the backboards, he's a monster in terms of the rebounding. But he's done a better job as of late of being able to move his feet and pick and roll. So that may allow him to be on the floor a little bit longer so that they can use his size advantage.
What, in your opinion, is the team that looks most like the Warriors? And I know that's a weird question to ask because nobody's got Stephen Curry and nobody has got Draymond Green, but what team, in your mind, looks the most like the Warriors, and how well did Memphis play that team?
I would say that whatever teams are athletic and like to play up tempo, so a New Orleans is similar in terms of just athleticism, wings that they have. But I think they are unique, like I said, in terms of the spacing and the constant movement. It's not something that you see in the NBA on a regular basis. And so there's not many sets where they get into a two-man game, the other three guys stand on the other side and wait. And so it'll be a new experience for this team just because Steph will be out there, and so you have to always have almost two guys to him. The other three may have to defend four. And so I don't think they've seen an animal like this in terms of how well the ball moves one through ten or however many guys play in the game. And so it'll be very important for them to at least try to force it to be one side of the court, not allowing them to play both sides. That'll give them a chance.
Brevin, Jaren Jackson Jr. just came back a little less than a month ago from his own knee injury and missed the entirety of the season up to that point. For those who haven't watched the Grizzlies closely, what do you expect from him in this kind of game, and does he still have any limitations as far as minutes go?
No limitation, and I expect, again, for him to be able to use his versatility, which is a lot of people, of course, see the threes, but what made him such a good offensive player is also his ability to play with his back to the basket. And so with him getting back and getting his rhythm and timing, and they put him back in the starting lineup the last couple of basketball games to try to find a normal rotation, I think it's another area where the Grizzlies have size across the front line, but they have versatility with that size. So either Valanciunas can play inside, Jaren can play outside. That can flip-flop depending on how they run the floor. And so with Jaren, he is just a big that puts the ball on the floor. He's almost like you got how Wiseman was for you guys in terms of the ability to play on the perimeter, can shoot threes, and put it on the floor somewhat, but the length that they are able to play with.
Brevin Knight with us. He's a Grizzlies TV analyst. Of course, he played at Stanford, spent 13 years in the NBA. Want to ask you, Brevin, I think Nick touched on this, but the Grizzlies are the only team the Warriors have beaten this season without Curry. What happened in that game that was 116-103 March 19th? Also want to throw in, you're a Stanford guy. What do you miss most about the Bay Area?
Well, first of all, the Bay Area is the weather is a big thing that I miss, being back down to school, familiar faces, and just the ability to be able to touch the different areas of the Bay. I still have friends that live in Oakland, like to come up to San Francisco to eat. Then we're back down south. I like to go down to Carmel. Just the different areas, mm-hmm. and the different type climates that you can get. Just driving to in the Bay Area. And it's one of the most beautiful areas of the country. So I will always be a Bay Area lover, and still have a lot of friends and people I consider family that are out there. So that'll always be high on my list. And so you got me so excited about the Bay Area that I get the first part of the question.
Well, I was wondering, you know, the as we mentioned, the Grizzlies are the only team that the Warriors have beaten this year without Steph. How did that happen? Does it have any bearing on anything that might happen on Sunday?
The biggest reason that in that game was Draymond Green was fantastic in that game, and I think he's a guy that you don't talk about a lot because of he does all of the intangibles for your team that lead to winning, and it's hard for time for you to put stats to what that says on a regular basis, and so he was good. I also just thought this team is young. And when you look across and there is no Steph Curry, they ran into that a couple of times this year by having a little bit of a letdown because you feel like, well, the star person is there. Now that gives us a chance, but you don't play as hard. You don't have the same sense of urgency, and that's what happened in that game. But I can promise you there will be no lack of sense of urgency because Jordan Poole introduced himself very nicely to this Grizzlies team and one in which they wouldn't forget.
All right, Brevin Knight, thanks. We appreciate your time very much. I don't want to wish you too much luck on Sunday. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the broadcast. We'll talk to you soon, sir.
All right, you guys have a good one.
One and only Brevin Knight on 95.7 The Game. So the Warriors, yeah, they beat Memphis once without Steph, but they got their attention, Nick.
Certainly Jordan Poole did. Certainly Jordan Poole did. I'm really fascinated by what this game becomes. Because when you haven't seen Steph, we've seen it a lot of times. And I thought Draymond put it really well the other night, guys. He said, all these teams come in with a plan, and then they see Steph, and then, everything's got to change. It's like the old Mike Tyson quote. Everybody comes in with a plan, and then you get punched in the mouth, and things change really quickly. This team has the athletic ability to stay with the Warriors, but they haven't seen Steph, which is why Golden State's going to have the edge.
And another reason why the Warriors won that game, Wiggins had a huge game. Wiggins, by the way, says the Warriors are a totally different team now. Is he right? We have that coming up. Meanwhile, Safeway, the largest buyer of Northern California produce, has great deals on your favorite sweet local strawberries, 1 pound size, either organic or conventional. Buy one, get one free, plus sweet local corn on sale, 4 for $1. Safeway, come in and explore. Wiggins says the Warriors are a different team. Are they? That's next. Damon Ratto and Kolsky with Whitey and Nick in for Damon and Kolsky today on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Thanks for being with us. Whitey Gleason in for Damon. Nick Friedel in for Kolsky. And Ray Ratto is here spouting scientific nonsense today about some outdated evolutionary claptrap. I mean, I'm with you, Nick. I was impressed that he knew something about Stephen Jay Gould, but still, Ray spouting this theory that there's no such thing as fish. Ray, that
first
is
of all, well,
such
Chamberlain.
An outdated
first
theory
of all,
that I think I speak for Nick when I say, I'm frankly insulted and a little embarrassed.
Well, you should be embarrassed and you should be insulted. What I said was he espoused the theory. I didn't say
I
espoused the theory.
I see. Yeah.
You want to go back and listen?
No, you did say that. But I'm
okay,
just saying,
then.
If you
and
brought
what,
it
and
up.
What, mm-hmm. And what did the piece of paper that Lucas gave you say?
It says, basically, it says Ray is wrong. I mean, I'm summarizing.
Okay, fine.
Right here. No, it says.
Ipso facto.
Stephen Jay Gould, famous scientist. He wasn't really talking mainly about the fish we keep in aquariums or even most of the fish that are in oceans, rivers, and lakes today, but about the amazing fossil fish that have been found and how some of the things we call fish have quite different an evolutionary history. That's basically what this is. But speaking of science, you mentioned swans because we were talking about the Pelicans. Warriors taking on the Pelicans tonight. And Nick and I know full well that a pelican is a badass bird. And Ray said, hey, don't sleep on the swan. Austin joins us from San Anselmo to back you up, Ray. Austin, you're on 95.7 The Game. Thanks for hanging. What's up?
Ray, you couldn't be more correct about swans. They are the mongoose of the waterfowl.
See?
Yeah.
Here's a guy who knows his stuff.
Yeah.
And what did he say?
He said you were right. Yeah.
No. I want you to listen to him say this again. Go ahead, Austin. Bury these two idiots.
Mongoose of the waterfowl world. They will. I've seen swans in Alaska just pick apart when they get in fights. It is. Well, I think that's where Wing Chun comes from. As a matter of fact, swans are masters at fighting. Huge chest muscles for flying. They got it all. The way they breathe. Look up their anatomy at some point if you really want to go down that rabbit hole.
I will. Austin, I have one more question for you, and thanks for listening. Thanks for chiming in.
Anatomy.
As a marine biologist, what do you think of Ray Ratto coming on the radio and saying there's no such thing as a fish?
A, I am not a marine biologist. I was a wilderness guide for over 30 years. Appreciate the compliment, though.
Okay.
And what was your second? What was your second question?
Well, it's moot now. Thank you. Appreciate it, Austin. If you're not a marine biologist, you're probably not going to be as offended as I thought you would be by what Ray said. I got some bad information there. I apologize. But there you go, Ray. I mean, there's someone who says, Ray is right about the swan. Thank you. I didn't know that about swans.
Listen, this is just every day for me.
Yeah, appreciate it. Good to be here back in studio.
Ray is the mongoose of 95.7 The Game.
Well, when you consider the rest of the wildlife in this building, I win the evolutionary race.
Huh. Okay.
I mean,
Ray's always going to find a way to hang on.
Yeah.
I love it.
I mean, Lucas is a starfish by comparison.
Yeah. For the record, Ray shot us what Ted Williams did to the left, center, and right field bleachers at Fenway when he got booed once. Ray did that to Nick and I when the Austin said, Ray's right. It's like, oh, okay. Right? Right? Speaking of birds, right?
The bird has appeared. The mongoose was quite happy in that moment.
When you dismissed me so cavalierly, it was the response you deserved.
I gotcha. Okay. All right. We will get to Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins had a big game when the Warriors beat the Grizzlies. So we'll get to that in just a moment, because Andrew Wiggins says the Warriors are a different team right now. Want to see what Nick and Ray and what you think of that at 888-957-9570. First, it's time for What's at Stake. What's at stake for the best team in the National League over the weekend? Brought to you by Harris Ranch Beef. Giants are in Pittsburgh. Saturday, Johnny Cueto versus Tyler Anderson. Cueto gets his second start off the IL, gave up 5 earned runs in 3 innings in his last start versus San Diego. Sunday, Alex Wood versus Mitch Keller. Wood looks for a 5-0 start to his Giants career. What's at stake for the Giants right now, Ray, as they got things rolling, a 4-game series against the Pirates?
Stay ahead of the Cardinals. I mean, I grant you it's very early in the season, so your position in the standings doesn't matter much.
The Padres, you mean, or the Dodgers?
The Cardinals.
Stay ahead of the Cardinals. Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought you had birds on the brain there. I apologize. Yeah.
Are Cardinals dangerous? What about Blue Jays?
I apologize. You mean in terms of the wild card race? I see.
Just everything. They have the two best records in the National League.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
who they're competing with this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's at stake this weekend, which is what the ad copy reads.
Yes, it does. You're absolutely
you
right.
You want to ask me something else with a different timeline? I'll give you a different answer.
I would also suggest it would certainly behoove the Giants to take advantage of the fact that the Dodgers, I know, are beaten up a little bit, and the Padres are really struggling right now, unfortunately, with COVID. So, the notion of the Giants winning the division not long ago would have been as preposterous as suggesting there's no such thing as a fish. Total nonsense. And yet, now it appears to be in play. So you want to take advantage of the fact that the Padres especially are really struggling right now, Nick. They got Tatis is out, Profar's out, Hosmer's out. Will Myers is out. And there's one other Padre that I'm missing.
But when you're playing the Pirates, Whitey, you always have to take advantage. They're mm-hmm. not good. They haven't been good. The Giants have found their rhythm again, seemingly. Time to take advantage of the moments in the schedule that allow you to give yourself a little breathing room, and now is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he accurately put.
Mm-hmm. All right. That is what's at stake for the best team in the National League. It's brought to you by Harris Ranch. Legendary beef, legendary quality. Shop at harrisranchbeef.com. Whitey and Nick Friedel and Ray Ratto on 95.7 The Game. We mentioned that when as you probably remember, when the Warriors beat the Grizzlies March 19th without Steph, Wiggins had a huge game, and Wiggins just had another huge game this week. And he suggests now that after that Suns win, after the Warriors beat the Suns, that they're a totally different team. You probably heard him say that. Nick, you're probably covering the postgame. So what do you make of Wiggins' contention that the Warriors right now, after that win, after beating Utah and Phoenix, they're a totally different team?
I actually agree with him.
Yeah?
I think this team is as confident as they've been all year. And, guys, what's even more crucial is everybody who's out there knows where to be, and there's a comfort level, especially with Andrew Wiggins and everyone else, that wasn't there earlier in the year. Wasn't even there in March. I mean, Andrew Wiggins had a nice game against Memphis, as you mentioned, but there were still times dating back to 6-7 weeks ago where whether it was Wiggins, whether it was Oubre, somebody would be out of position, this happened to Wiseman a lot when he was still healthy, and they would go, what the hell are you all doing? Everybody out there, the eight right now who have been playing a lot more, and we'll see what happens tonight with Eric Paschal and Jordan Bell, everybody knows where to be. And that rhythm can only come over the course of a season. And when you've struggled at times to find it, when you have it, you just got to ride it out. And you've got to hope that you can continue it into the play-in and beyond. And when Wiggins said that, it was backed up several times by Draymond and Steve Kerr saying the same thing. So they all knew and hoped that the tide would turn and they would find a bunch of wins at the end of the season, and they were right.
What was the game that did it, though? Because there's like 18 moments that we're talking about. What was the game that gave them the feeling that they were done being inconsistent and confused?
Was it perhaps finishing as strongly as they did against a good team in the Suns? Because they had struggled down the stretch of close games quite a bit.
Very much so. And, Ray, I think the answer to your question is it wasn't in one game, it was in two. The tide turned, and they turned the corner of the year in the Utah and the Phoenix game. Because a lot of people were like, I don't know. I don't know if they can get either one of these, even without Utah, or with Utah playing without Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley, because they were just more talented, seemingly, top to bottom. At the end of that Phoenix game, and especially because Steph wasn't shooting it well, that team looked at itself, the Warriors did, a lot differently than it had when the season started. So they got through those two games with Steph going 1-for-11 from beyond the arc, and they went, damn, we can still win. And it had been building up to that point, but when you continue beating teams you're supposed to beat and finding ways to win instead of lose, and Whitey going back to closing games, yeah, which had been such a huge problem for them throughout the year, when you do it against the top two teams in the West, and you do it on nights when Steph isn't at his best, that can change the entire confidence of the group.
So, trying to fathom this, because it seems like they had that sense before those two games and merely manifested itself then. And what I'm wondering is, what was the game that gave them the confidence that they could employ when they got to Utah and Phoenix? Was it the two games against Denver? Was it the win over Milwaukee? When did you sense that they thought differently about themselves?
Ray, it's a really good question. And I would have to go back to me, when it started to change was the night when Steph eclipsed Wilt.
Hmm.
And I believe that was the Denver game, wasn't it? That they beat Denver.
So,
that,
yeah,
was when Jamal Murray went down at the end,
yeah,
of the game. When they beat Denver and they saw Steph going off, I think everybody kind of went, all right, maybe we can get more out of this season than what we thought. And maybe everything that had been building to that point started to shift. So I think that was crucial. But I agree with what you're saying, which is they've won 12 of 17, and they've put together all these different ways in which they can win. But I don't think it was all firmed up until these last couple of nights.
Yeah.
And when you go and beat Utah and Phoenix, the way in which they did with Steph really seemingly dragging, which is why I think in large part, guys, he's not playing tonight, because I think he is a little tired, and he is a human being who's played a hell of a lot of minutes this year. When you factor all those things together, you have confidence being built, and it's starting to shift in that Denver game, and the corner being turned earlier in the week.
Yeah, to my eye, it was a matter of them winning those two games and sort of realizing as it happened, as they beat Utah, and then with the strong finish against the Suns, like, okay, we can do this. Not so much that they didn't do it because they knew they could do it. They did it and then learned, all right. And by the way, this is neither here nor there, but as you're describing the end of the Phoenix game, the shot that Steph made when I think it was 118-116 and he comes across the lane falling down,
like floating
with a left
hook.
Hand, like, what was that?
Steph gives them the confidence to beat anybody at any time. And that's why so many teams want no part of the Warriors, guys. It's pretty damn obvious when you watch Steph Curry, not only the fear that he puts in opponents and the fear that he places on coaching staffs who are trying to compare or prepare for him, it is the confidence that his game gives everybody else that he plays with. There is an awe that the younger Warriors players have in playing with Steph Curry. But that awe manifests itself every night late in games because they see him doing what he can do, and they go, I have to raise the level of my own game. And it got lost in the shuffle the other night, but Whitey, to exactly what you're saying, Steph had that crazy shot, and it was great. Jordan Poole hit a huge three.
Yeah.
Juan Toscano-Anderson hit a huge three early in the year.
Wiggins left wing. Yeah.
Wiggins was awesome throughout so much of that night, but earlier in the year, especially with Poole and Toscano-Anderson, no way in hell they make those shots. No way in hell they're on the floor to make those shots. The fact that they continue to see Steph doing what he's doing out of their own mouths, they want to be able to help him. And they know in order to do that, with all the attention that he draws from opposing defenses, they're going to get the room. And those shots are the type of shots that help younger players grow in their own games, and maybe that is something we'll see more of in the next week or two.
Yeah. Scoring title. Does Steph have it locked up? Do you know, Ray? Do you know, Nick? Beal, he's probably not going to play again, right? Because I know he's got the ankle and he's got the hamstring. And then Steph is ahead of him, what, 0.4 of a point, something like that?
I thought it was even wider than that. But either way, with him not playing tonight, Whitey, I think he should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were betting, there's no way in hell. No way that Steph doesn't have at least 30 in that game on Sunday. That would stun me.
And Beal's not playing tonight, so.
Right.
Yeah, I would think he's done, period, with the hamstring. And they're, I think they're pretty much locked into whatever position they're going to be in.
No, they're not. They in Indiana are touch and go about where that 9-10 game's going to be.
Oh, about which, okay, about where they're going to, who's going to be the home team for that?
In the play-in deal.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Okay, 15 and 15 and a half. You're right. Yeah, home court still at stake there. I don't know about Beal, though, with the hamstring. The play-in deal, as they're, the PID, as they're officially calling it. Ray, are you buying the notion that, as Wiggins says, that the Warriors are a different team right now? Steve Kerr called this, right? He said, we're going to go on a run because...
called it for like 2 months.
Yeah, because he has a schedule. Like, he has a pocket schedule, yeah. Right? And he has the internet, and he's looking at the schedule. So he knew what was coming. But are they a different team? I still have a hard time understanding exactly how they beat the Suns. Watching it, happens like, what? And you can see it on the Suns' faces. Like, we have this game won. What happened? So are they a different team?
I don't know if they're a different team. But the thing they did against the Suns that was unusual and probably not replicable is that they outscored them 62-32 in the paint and out-rebounded them to the point where DeAndre Ayton didn't really matter. On a night when the Warriors didn't, you know, their tallest guy, once again, Draymond Green, you know, and so I would have thought that Phoenix would have found ways, if not to go to Ayton and make him an offensive force, at least have him on the boards, you know, to get 10 or 12. He ended up with 5, I think. And I think it was the Warriors' willingness to attack the basket in ways that they haven't before. And maybe part of that was because Curry was putting together his second straight awful shooting night. But they adjusted to that. That's the thing that...
they couldn't buy a three until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but I mean, the point is they didn't wait to unlock the three. They got aggressive offensively for a team that doesn't really like to do that much, I don't think. I mean, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but... they don't go hard to the basket.
Please correct him if he's wrong. Please.
No, he's right. I mean, but that is
Whitey. You're tilting.
Please, someone correct Ray. Can someone correct Ray?
You're
guys,
spitting in the wind on that. Okay.
Guys, this is why people feel like the Warriors, if they get in to the postseason, they have a shot. And it's not just Steph. It's because, Ray, does Phoenix, the way they're playing, especially the other night with Ayton, do they strike fear in the hearts of anybody they come across?
No, sir.
They don't have that type of experience. Utah has it on a higher level because they've been in there a little bit, but they haven't won anything. But Mitchell and Gobert, they've all been through the big games. And Ingles, Phoenix, Chris Paul, we know his deal in the postseason. He's never gotten to the mountaintop. And with Booker, he's never been. And Ayton, these guys have not been in these type of pressure-packed situations. This is exactly why, if you're giving a team a series to find ways to, in this case, if you're the Warriors, get Steph the ball or get clean looks for Wiggins if he gets going like he did the other night, it's why that the Warriors are believed to have a puncher's chance against whomever they come across.
Yeah. By the way, update on that scoring race, and you may already know this, but Nick, Steph Curry's at 31.8 points per game, and Bradley Beal's at 31.4. So, yeah, if Beal doesn't play. So, Steph should be in pretty good shape there. We were talking about the Giants earlier and how GMs around the league or front office types say the Giants are the biggest surprise of the baseball season so far. We'll see how that goes. What's been the most surprising story of the NBA's regular season? Utah's been a big surprise. Last year I thought, oh, Mike Conley, here they go. And maybe it took a while for that to take root. Obviously, your buddy Tibbs has done a great job with the Knicks. Not a lot of people saw the Suns coming. What to you has been the biggest surprise of this NBA regular season, which is concluding this weekend?
To me, and I acknowledge my bias because I was around him for those 5 years so closely in Chicago, nobody expected anything from the Knicks. Nobody. The fact that this Knicks team is on the verge of home court advantage in the postseason and has been in the conversation throughout, and Julius Randle is playing at an MVP level. I can't tell you how many times in the last year and a half, people would come up to me and say, your boy Tibbs is done. And I'm like, what are you talking about, done? And they're like, he'll never be a head coach in this league again. And I said, I don't know. If you get him in the right situation, he's still got a chance. And Leon Rose and World Wide West came into power in New York. There was a long-standing relationship with Tibbs. He comes in. He is at his best with when he's got teams that nobody believes in, because that's all he tells them all day and night, is that nobody thinks you guys are any good. You can do more than what you're being given credit for. It's happened again in New York, and he's revitalized a team that so many people have written off for so long. It's another cool story to see.
Yeah, Ray, another big surprise. I thought, I know we're on in the River City, I thought this was the year for Sacramento to bust through, snap that streak and not making the playoffs. It didn't happen with their loss last night. Certainly you have to consider that one of the big surprises of the year.
No. Until they
Ray,
break
we're
through.
On in Sacramento, right? Your show's on in Sacramento.
I'm not required by contract to lie to our listeners.
Wow.
Until they break through, they haven't broken through. And the fact that it's been 15 years in a row is, you know, I mean, it's just, when you do it, come tell me. I mean, yes, they, you know, Tyrese Halliburton is fun to watch and De'Aaron Fox is fun to watch, but that's still a team that's going to end up behind New Orleans, which means they're three games behind a team that's going to be, you know, four games under 500.
Yeah, their defense has been awful, and Luke Walton was supposed to be a defensive coach. Yeah. That's really the bottom line for them.
Well, you know, I'm not blaming this on Walton. I'm blaming this on years of just sort of roster incompetence by the people above him. And for me, if you can't make the playoffs year after year, you've lost the right to have a benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and this one really stings because the Knicks broke their streak, right? Yep. The Hawks, right? The Suns getting in, and this Sacramento's 15 years in a row.
Luke Walton is not the coach anymore, is he?
I think he comes back.
You do?
I think Monty McNair likes him. I think they've got money issues, too.
Yeah, That could,
and the
that
and the buyout.
There's, yeah, there's always the trump card now.
And the buyout, I think, is monstrous by coaching standards, because they didn't. He didn't get a low ball contract. He got paid pretty well, as I recall.
It was instantaneous. Remember, he got fired on like a Thursday and had that job on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think there's at least a 50-50 shot that he keeps it. And this is coming from a guy who pays very little attention to the Kings. Why do you pay a lot of attention to the Kings? What do you think?
I think he will be back. I think you're absolutely right. And I think the finances have a lot to do with that. I do think they've, you know, with Vlade out, Monty McNair in, I think they're closer to the right track. They may not even be on it yet, but I think they're closer to it, to Ray's point. You know, you see it in a lot of sports. Teams that are just habitually mismanaged, when some of that comes from the very top, it's really difficult, as you know, Nick, to overcome that. So I think they, you know, Halliburton is an outstanding young player. I was hoping the Warriors would get him. So, yeah, I think there are reasons to think it's looking up, but they still got a long, long ways to go. Again, when you look at, as we say every freaking year, right, Nick, how tough the Western Conference is.
And it's not stopping anytime soon. The talent that is still within the conference is impressive. But I'd ask you guys this. The Warriors are the Warriors still because of Steph.
Mm-hmm.
And your casual basketball fan is going to tune in because of Steph Curry and the enjoyment that he brings to so many people who watch him. If you're a casual basketball fan this season, what is making you tune in to watch games?
Well, to me, it's I mean, what Steph is doing is, you know, you mentioned how he broke Wilt's record, and I barely remember Wilt Chamberlain. By the time I remember Wilt Chamberlain, he was more of a defensive player. But, you know, if you know anything about basketball and the history of basketball, he was just an unstoppable force. And so is Steph in a totally different way.
Yeah.
Right? And I was watching, I think it was the Boston game. You know, it was a great Saturday night game. And one of my daughters, she played a little high school basketball, and she happened to be visiting, and we're watching, and she goes, you know, you can't guard him. And it's true, right? You see, we've said that about players throughout history. He's unguardable. But right now, the way he's playing, you can see the way guys are trying to guard him, multiple guys, and he's unguardable because you give him a split second. And he's so quick. His release is so quick, and he's got so much range, and he's smart enough to take the ball to the basket. The thing about Steph is you know what he can do, and you know what he's going to do, and you know that he can shoot like no one else. And still, there have been games during the streak where, I didn't know he could do that. It's been unlike anything else I've ever seen in basketball.
But, Ray, that's the problem. I think we are so lucky out here in the Bay to have watched Steph come up the way he has and to play the way he is. But besides Steph, if you're looking around the league and you're in the NBA office, what are you trying to build around besides the greatness of watching this guy play every night? And Whitey, as you said, to try and stop him because you really can't.
Well, there are teams that can, but they have to commit so many resources
to do it.
To do it, that it allows Andrew Wiggins to go for 38. That's the conundrum of the Warriors. It's not that Curry can't be stopped. We saw in the last two games, really, Phoenix more than Utah.
Phoenix, for sure.
But Phoenix committed to stopping him, and they did. He was not very good offensively. But how many other open looks did you see? How many times did the Warriors take that information and go hard to the basket and get something else out of it? That's the conundrum now, because I think the assumption on the Warriors is take Curry out of the game. You can do this. You know, double team him, have somebody else come off screens, make sure he never is comfortable. And that's worked on occasion in the past. But for the first time all year, you get the sense that the Warriors have a counter move. That's the difference to me. And I don't know if that's sellable by NBA definitions, because, you know, as you said yourself, well, there's the familiar name that we've had for 15 years. There's the familiar name we've had for 10 years. We're going to sell those guys.
Yeah.
You're not going to amaze people bringing them the Warriors if Steph Curry is held to 21.
And the other thing, Nick, and I know you got to run here, as far as besides Steph, what's watchable in the NBA? For me, part of it is watching the Nets and hoping they fail, honestly. You know, just that super team and Harden and Kyrie and Durant. Oh, I hope that doesn't work.
Whitey, they've taken on that villain role
for
the league for sure. Mm-hmm. Because there was so much star power that went to the same place, and fans, they don't like that, as we saw out here. But there is no doubt that there are a lot of people that are hoping the Nets fall on their face in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
But the hypocrisy of that is so preposterous.
Oh, yeah.
Because as much as people complain about the Warriors and their, you know, made-to-order team, the ratings have never been better, and they were driven by that Warrior team.
Love to hate.
But how is that hypocrisy? I admit, I want to see them. I want to see them fail, but I want to see them. So, and I know we're talking about in fan terms here. How is that hypocrisy?
It's hypocrisy because, not you being a hypocrite.
Yeah.
You're a bunch of other things, but a hypocrite is not that.
I could add that to the list. It's not a problem.
No, but it's not that people hate watching that. They're absolutely riveted by it.
Yeah.
And what they're interested in more than anything else is, gee, I wonder how extraordinary you have to be to beat that. That's the curiosity. It's not that they hated the Warriors. Even when people were complaining when they went out and got Durant, that's like the seventh, quote, super team that the NBA has built since 1970. It was not an unusual thing, and the people who thought it was don't know history.
Did you hear, and you guys probably talked about this, I apologize if you did, you hear what Julius Erving said about LeBron? And he left LeBron off his list of the 10 greatest players. This is the great Dr. J, and one of the reasons he did is he said, you know what, he handpicked his teams. And someone pointed out to, you know, Dr. J, you were on kind of some, you know, super team with Philadelphia. So it's really an old school way of looking at it. I agree with you, and I love Dr. J. I strongly disagreed with him. Some of it is just, you know, back in my day we did it better, but we've had super teams going way, way, way back. They were just put together differently.
1970. Wilt Chamberlain forced a trade from Philadelphia to Los Angeles because he wanted to live on the West Coast. He joined Jerry West and Elgin Baylor. It's a super team.
And they won one championship, right? That's it. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
not disagreeing with you, but yeah.
But what I'm saying is that was largely player-created because Wilt Chamberlain created it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you saw, you know, the way that Michael Jordan had a hand in, you know, we need this kind of guy to play center.
Well, let me back up, and I'm not disagreeing at all, but you go back to Magic and those Lakers, and they had a pretty good center, right? And he forced his way out of Milwaukee because he wanted to go back to LA. And again, that's fine, but yeah, so we've had players dictating some of these moves that have led to super teams for decades.
Well, that's the point. It's just people who wanted to complain about that needed something to complain about. And the fascination with complaining about that really is the fascination with, gee, I wonder how they could get beaten. Because in 2016, the Warriors had won essentially 93 games. You know, it's not 93, it's 88. They didn't win 20 more games in the playoffs, but more games than anybody else has ever won. And so it was hard to foresee how that could happen until Oklahoma City went up 3-1 on them.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, people became fascinated just by the whole spectacle of it. But, you know, I think the Nets, you know, are not that hated because you didn't really get from the Nets what you thought you were going to get when you wanted to hate them so badly. Because those three guys haven't played with each other except for like seven games all year.
They remind me of
it's the myth of them, not the reality of them.
They remind me of the Clippers last year. And I know last year was an anomaly because we had the pandemic and then the bubble. But all during the regular season, such as it was, the Clippers last year, they would pick their spots and they were making sure everybody was well rested and they didn't have a lot of time on the floor together. Then they got in the postseason. And, you know, how big of a factor was, I don't know, but it was a factor when they get knocked off by a Denver, right, that they didn't spend enough time on the floor to develop the continuity that a championship caliber team needs. And that's one of the things that the Warriors still have to a degree, even without Klay.
Are the Warriors closer now as they've gone on this run here, and who knows how this play-in thing is going to end up? Are they closer to being a championship team next year than they were a few weeks ago? I know there's so much that has to happen in the offseason that's in some ways impossible to answer because we don't know what's going to happen. But do you think they've moved the whole thing closer to the point where they can feel good, better than they could about being a championship contender or close to it again next year?
They've moved closer to being a tough out this year. Next year's team is going to be significantly different because it has to be. They have to figure out what to do with Oubre. They have to figure out when Thompson will be ready to go.
They have to hope they get lucky with the Minnesota pick.
Well, and also they have to hope that Weissman suddenly gets it. Because he was a difficult watch this past year. So a lot of things about this team are going to change next year, which means that this year has less to do with next year than normal teams, because you'd be adding a Hall of Fame shooter. You'd be adding what you hope is the centerpiece of your franchise for the next decade and another draft pick. And you're trying to figure out how to bolster your bench, because you can't have an entire bench of Juan Toscano-Andersons. You can have one of them.
Right.
But you can't have five. This team's going to change a lot.
It's been a fascinating year. Obviously, things haven't worked out for the Warriors the way they hoped they would. Starting with when Clay got hurt, but it's been, you know, you compare it to last year, and I've made this point with Nick a few times. Some people want to, when the Warriors weren't playing well, they wanted to compare this year to last year. Last year was terrible. Last year was awful. This year, if nothing else, and we still got a lot of pizza left in the box, it's been very interesting.
What they did was take the most unusual route to getting to the place where most people thought they would end, which was in the play-in. That's what happened. They thought that Weissman would start better, and he didn't. They thought that Oubre would be the defender that Wiggins turned out to be. They never thought that Curry could be this.
No.
As good as Curry has been in the past, nobody saw this.
I've never seen anything quite like this since Allen Iverson in terms of a smaller guy carrying the team. That's an imperfect comparison because they're different players, but that's in some ways what this reminds me of, is that Iverson, what he did with guys like, you know, Tom McCullough and Aaron McKee and Eric Snow and those guys. And, oh, come on, guys, we're going to go to the finals.
And the other thing is, I don't think people saw the Draymond Green reversal that he gave them, because he's now an extraordinary assist guy. Very good rebounder, which he's always been. Very good defender, which he's always been. But all of a sudden, he's the team's primary distributor from basically, you know, power forward spot. And nobody saw that coming either. So they ended up on the 8-9 cusp, which most people thought, in the weirdest way possible. At the beginning of the year, people were trying to figure out the most creative way to get Andrew Wiggins off this team. Now they look at him as a foundational piece for next year.
Have an update for you, Ray, and dear listener. One of the Warriors whom we thought might not play tonight is in the starting lineup, Michael Mulder. It's Jordan Poole. Here's the starters for tonight against the Pelicans. Jordan Poole, Michael Mulder, Kent Bazemore, Juan Toscano-Anderson, and Kevon Looney starting tonight. And welcome back, Eric Paschal. He'll be limited to around... it's just somewhere between 2 and 24 minutes tonight. Maybe that's supposed to be 12 to 24 minutes.
We're probably 2 and 24.
Yeah. Is it 20 and 24? Yeah.
Who's starting for New Orleans?
I don't have that information.
Because this has a chance to be an awful-looking game.
It can't be. It's on national television.
This has a chance to be an incredibly awful-looking game.
Do you think this is a positive, negative, or neither here nor there for the NBA? For the ninth straight year and the NBA regular season wrapping up this weekend, the NBA sets a league record for made threes per game for the ninth straight season.
I think it's heading in a direction where they're going to sort of address this soon, but it's not there yet. And for the same reason that baseball still doesn't think that walks, strikeouts, and home runs are not the way to go. It takes a lot to change the nature of basketball. And the NBA didn't plan on doing that when Curry became Curry, in the same way that they didn't expect what they would have to do to change the game when Wilt Chamberlain.
How could you even address this, Ray? No, we don't have time to get into it.
No,
really,
it's very easy.
Yeah?
The first thing you do is you cut off the corner three.
Okay.
And basically just extend the arc all the way to the sideline. Because the corner three is the easiest three.
What do you think of this idea? Not my idea. I thought it was kind of cool first. Now I realize it's unworkable. I think Kirk Goldsberry, who's written a lot about this, he suggests each team in the NBA should be able to put the three-point line where they want to on their home court. I'm not making that up. It's been suggested.
Okay. So now you have 30 different playing surfaces.
Exactly. Kind of like as Lucas says, you know, baseball stadiums, you got the fences in different
but
places.
But it's gimmicking up something that doesn't it's not addressing a problem. It's just basically saying we're going to change the nature of the game based on our own limitations, not on our, you know. I mean, what are the Warriors going to do? Move the 3-point line back by 3 feet now?
Ray,
because
thank you.
They've got the guy who can shoot? No, they won't do that.
Thank you so much. Good news for you is that Damon and Kolsky are back on Monday. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Nick Friedell. Thank you, Lucas. Thank you, Nash. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate it. Coming up next, we've got Warriors Live, JD and Covey on 95.7 The Game.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
If you've got an insurance question, you could talk to